half of the course. We are now halfway through the semester. I feel like we're just warming up, but this is lecture 15, so we're halfway through. We're going to spend now 2 weeks on the state and politics. Now, of course, that's, as in every topic here, vastly too short a time to really deal with the theory of the state and politics. It's not as egregious a deficit as some of the other topics, because in fact the themes of the state and politics will pervade many of the discussions from here on out. It's just that we're going to be devoting explicit focal discussion just for the next 2 weeks on this. This first session, called What is Politics, What is the State, is the basic vocabulary discussion. Sort of in each of these blocks of the course, there's an initial task to be done, which is basically clarifying what the words mean as we talk about things like the state, politics, power. What are the basic building blocks of the concepts or terms that we'll be using throughout this discussion? But of course, as in any vocabulary discussion in social theory, it's never really just a question of defining words, because the definitions themselves get their meaning from the work they do within a broader theoretical context. What I want to do here, as much as possible, are really two primary things. The first part of the lecture is going to discuss this question which we've briefly talked about already, the problem of functional explanation. Since functional explanations figure so strongly in theories of politics and the state, and I think this is a good time to really nail down that idea. So we'll spend the first part of the lecture talking about functional explanation. And then I will do the kind of focused vocabulary building by building up a concept of the state by starting with the notion of practice and political practice, and then adding complexities and specifications until we get this sort of full repertoire or inventory of concepts that we use in political discussions. So first then, the question of functional explanation. The idea of a functional explanation in the Marxist tradition is closely tied to a metaphor that was popular at one point in Marxist discussions. It's no longer used that much. It's pretty suspect these days, but I think it's nevertheless a useful metaphor. And it's the metaphor of base and superstructure. That's the language within which, in much of the 20th century, discussions of the state were presented. The basic image was that the economy constituted the base of the society, and the state, along with some other things, ideology would be put in the superstructure as well. The state would be the superstructure. And along with that base and superstructure metaphor, that's a kind of architectural metaphor, right? You know, it's the base is the foundation, the superstructure is built upon the foundation. That architectural metaphor underwrote an explanatory argument that bases explained the superstructure. The base was somehow primary, the superstructure was a consequence of the base. Why does the superstructure take the form it does? Because the base requires it. Now, underlying that way of talking about it is this notion of a functional explanation. We've already talked about this a little bit. Let me now try to more formally elaborate how to think about a functional explanation. Since I have digressions in lectures, I don't always remember exactly what I mentioned. I didn't discuss the fishing ritual example, did I?
No.
No, okay. This is the kind of key example that I use to kind of explain the logic of what a functional explanation is, and then you can see how you can apply this to more complicated settings. But first, just to review something which I did say, there is an area of scientific explanation where nobody has any problem with functional explanations, and that's in biology. So the example which I gave before, in answer to the question, why do birds have hollow, the bones of birds' wings, why are they hollow? The answer is because that enables the birds to fly, right? So that is explaining a structure, the hollowness of the bones, by the consequences of that structure, enabling flight. If the bones were solid, the birds' wings would be too heavy and they couldn't fly. Why do we have blood that flows through our body? Well, one part of it is because it delivers oxygen to our cells, without which the cells would die. The answer to the question, why does blood flow through our body, is given by the functions it fills for the system as a whole, in this case, providing oxygen to cells. That is a consequence of the blood flowing through the body, but it's used to explain why the blood does flow through the body. And normally we think of that as a kind of weird explanation, right? You're explaining something by its consequences. Why does blood flow? Because of its effects. Normally we think of explanations of causes of something coming before rather than after. Explaining something by its effects, or more precisely, to explain something by its beneficial effects, is to provide a functional explanation. That's what a functional explanation is. Explaining the existence of something by its beneficial consequences. Now, in biology, we don't have any problem with that because we have a very robust theory called natural selection, which helps us understand how it comes to pass that blood flows through the body in order to provide oxygen to the cells. How does it come to pass? Well, it comes to pass through this complicated process we call natural selection. Let's look at a social example and see how it might work. This comes from a very good book, which I don't know if it's still used in graduate teaching. It's one of the core books I learned from as a graduate student. It's Arthur Stinchcomb's book, Constructing Social Theories. And it's basically a book on the logic of theory construction. How do you build theories from kind of modular elements? What are the ingredients of building theories? And one of the ingredients of building theories is functional explanations. And the book is really excellent in giving precision to these different ways of building explanations. I highly recommend it.
What was the author again?
Arthur Stinchcomb. It's called Constructing Social Theories. So here is the my favorite example. Bronislaw Malinowski was a famous early 20th century anthropologist. He studied the Trobriand Islanders in the South Pacific. And he observed the following. This was a fishing culture, lived on a small island and the people did. They fished in two environments, in lagoons and in the open sea. When they fished in the lagoons, they just went out and fished. When they fished in the open sea, they had elaborate rituals with a shaman who would perform these rites with dancing and singing and whatever before they would go out to the open seas. And he asked the question, why is it the case in the Trobriand Islands that there are fishing rituals for the open sea but not for the lagoon? The diet of the people relied as much on lagoon fishing as on open sea fishing, perhaps more. Why do they have rituals when they go out in the open sea? And the answer was that the open sea fishing is much more dangerous, it creates a lot of fear, and the rituals are needed to give people a sense of assurance that the gods will support them and that they will be taken care of when they go out on the sea, which reduces their fear and enables them to go fishing. The explanation for the ritual is its effect. It's beneficial in reducing the fear that people have of open sea fishing. So you explain the ritual by its consequences, fear reduction. Stinchcomb